with the existential crises that we have created. So again, it's a kind of perfect storm. Part all sorts of sources, including just socioeconomic policies of a bipartisan nature.
Noam Chomsky, speaking April 24th at the First Parish Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts, professor emeritus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. His latest book, Requiem for the American Dream. And that does it for today's show. If you'd like to get a DVD copy, you can go to democracynow.org. Also, you can go there to read the transcript or get any video or audio podcast of any of our shows. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Tarina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Are you bored or unsatisfied with your daily activities? Do you long for a new, exciting experience? If the answer is yes and you're under 21 just like me, then you should consider adding a once-a-week KBOO Youth Collective meeting to your schedule. Side effects will probably include extreme happiness, uncontrollable fits of laughter, a great group of new friends, and yummy snacks. KBOO Youth Collective can cause sudden bouts of inspiration and a yearning to share your words or your inner thoughts with the local community. If joining the collective sounds like a cure for your boredom and lack of an extraordinary after-school activity, then write us at youth@kboo.org or visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Or come into one of our Wednesday meetings for a scare-free, risk-free, and always cost-free trial.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
The time is 5:02 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The KBOO Evening News is off tonight. Instead, this is an episode of Veterans for Peace. Is there a war on Christmas?
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over. And a new one just begun. And so this is.
Well, there's John Lennon, and so this is Christmas, and here's our Christmas show. And my name is Jim Wohlgemuth, with co-host and fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We are the Veterans for Peace Radio Hour. Veterans for Peace is a global organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace by using our experiences, lifting our voices. Our network is comprised of over 100 chapters worldwide. Our radio show is heard across the nation. We meet the first Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m. at the International Marketing Cafe near Belmont University in downtown Nashville. Please join us. And remember, you can get a copy of the show by just going to our Facebook page, search Veterans for Peace Chapter 089, or SoundCloud, search the same thing. And please follow us on Twitter at VFP Radio Nashville and at VFP 89 Radio.
Theme for our Christmas show, which we'll talk about earlier, is the real war on Christmas.
But tell us about the war on the VA.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of wars, there are two bills now, one in the Senate, one in the House, who have a lot of nice-sounding language in them, but the bottom line is they're all about stripping the VA of the ability to manage veterans' care and steering veterans to private sector sources of care, which the VA has to pay for, which means their budget continues to shrink. So how can you tell that it's going to be all about privatizing the VA if they avoid that word? You know, it's like transgender and evidence-based. Those words aren't allowed. But just listen for these things, and you may recognize some parallels with the move to privatize education in this country. Privatization doesn't only mean selling off public sector resources to private sector interests. It involves a range of actions that create the perception that public sector systems do not and can never deliver high-quality services. Government is bad, right? Specific policies and actions then proceed to make this a self-fulfilling prophecy. And there you have it, privatization. So here's some of the tactics they use. First thing, portray the public system as broken or beyond repair. And if you follow the news...
You mean like having headlines and news articles on USA Today, which only talk about problems with the VA, but never talk about private sector hospitals where 200,000 people might die every year?
Yeah. It's all about exposing what's happening at the VA and pretending nothing happens at the private sector hospitals. Portray the private sector system as the solution to any quality or service problems in the public sector. Blame any problems in the public system on its employees or administrators rather than on complex social problems like perpetual war or political decisions like underfunding. Create draconian accountability measures and standards that cripple the organization, depriving employees of their workplace rights. Create a shame and blame atmosphere in the workplace that demoralizes the workforce. Attack public sector unions as obstacles to reform, progress, or delivery of high-quality services. Starve the public sector system of needed resources and appropriate staff, as in the 40,000 vacancies in the VA system right now. Fail to adequately maintain and improve infrastructure and facilities. Shift public funds to the private sector, and this is what both of these bills would do. Spin deals with for-profit companies to provide services that have been adequately delivered in the public sector system. Reduce erosion of services and respond to service users' complaints by arguing for further privatization. And how did we figure this out? The Battle for Veterans Healthcare by Suzanne Gordon is a great resource to help you get a handle on what's going on. But this is a long and winding road, and veterans who think they're getting special privileges by going to the dock down the street are going to wake up one of these days when they need the VA, and it won't be there. So call your congressmen and senators. If you're in Nashville, call Jim Cooper's office, 202-225-4311. Say you're against privatization. Instead, fix, fund, and fully staff the VA.
And there's a bill in the House, right?
4242.
Tell them say no. No to 4242.
Right. Senator Corker, 202-224-3344. You may have trouble getting through there. I know a lot of people are calling to congratulate him on his
tax
change
bill.
Of heart.
Yeah, the fraudulent Senator Cooper.
Senator Alexander, 202-224-4944. And if you don't live in Tennessee, 202-224-3121 will get you the switchboard, and all you have to do is tell them your zip code.
Yep, that's it, so, and they'll give you the right place.
So that's the war on the VA, which is, I think, just one of the skirmishes in the war on Christmas, or vice versa.
Oh, for sure. So speaking of the war on Christmas,
let's get started.
Here we go.
This being our final show before our nation's and our world's first Christmas under Caesar Trump, we can't resist examining our current state of affairs through the lens of Christmas, quote unquote, whatever that may mean to us here in the USA in the 21st century. I would sum up our view here at Veterans for Peace as Scrooge lives.
And not to mention Mr. Potter from A Wonderful Life.
Yes, the real war on Christmas. According to the Sunday New York Times, Fox News has been featuring a continuous update of the ongoing war on Christmas, quote unquote, which has been manifested principally by the use of Happy Holidays in greetings, replacing the traditional Merry Christmas, both in personal exchanges, in the media, store signage, and especially by secular, politically correct elites, such as the former President Obama.
That's right.
Well, Fox sees its role as keeping us informed of which stores or brands, et cetera, are on the wrong side of the issue with their marketing messages and greetings, so that we can patronize the good guys who honor tradition by boldly proclaiming Merry Christmas, regardless of who they're talking to. Apparently, no other corporate behaviors are considered as being pro or anti-Christmas message, such as their treatment of their workers, their generosity, their pay, their benefits, their sales of products such as war toys, clothing, toys, etc., produced by people working under practically slavery conditions and dangerous workplaces, discrimination in the workplace, sexual harassment in the workplace, just to name a few issues that would seem to deserve appraisal over and against Christmas values, whatever those would be.
And of course, you got the folks that in some of these stores, these workers in some of these stores, that get so little pay that they're actually eligible for food stamps. Just throwing that in.
Well, yeah, they're subsidized by the federal government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, barring divine intervention, we will, by the time you hear this program, have seen the signing into law of the Republican Tax Cut and Jobs Act, that's what they call it, which President Trump calls a Christmas present to the American people, promising us Christmas is back, bigger and better than ever before. Well, although it appears nobody other than the lobbyists who wrote them have seen the actual wording of all the provisions that make up this act, it's obvious to most people in the U.S. that Scrooge himself would be hard-pressed to come up with anything as brazenly heartless and self-serving as Ryan, McConnell, and company have crafted. We can count on seeing even more extremes of poverty, the shrinking of the middle class, an ever greater concentration of wealth and power into the hands of a few hundred plutocrats. So meanwhile, millions of low-income families with sick children who receive life-saving medical care through the CHIP program, Child Health Insurance Program, are bereft of any joy this season as Congress refuses to renew funding for the program, at least until their donors have been paid off. And in Tennessee, I understand that it's almost two-thirds of children.
Almost two-thirds.
That's staggering.
We heard that today. Two-thirds of children
either
get some
on Medicaid
sort of
or CHIP.
CHIP, some sort of assistance. One out of three do not.
Well, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa defended eliminating the estate tax, which will cost several hundred billion to eliminate, mm-hmm. because he's referring to people with estates over 5.5 million or 11 million for couples, should be rewarded for not spending all their money on booze, women, and movies.
Do you want to listen to Cenk Uygur? He's from the Young Turks, describing Grassley's comments.
What did he have to say about that?
All right, so here's Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks describing Grassley's comments. He's right in the middle of comparing you, our listeners, the taxpayers, the working people. He's right in the middle of comparing you to Paris Hilton, meaning you get taxed and she does not. So here's Cenk.
But you work, you get taxed. She doesn't work, she doesn't get taxed. That's what Chuck Grassley thinks is fair. But it wasn't good enough. He had to rub it in a little bit more. So he said this. I think not having the estate tax recognizes that people are investing as opposed to those that are just spending every darn penny they have, whether it's on booze or women or movies. Oh, that's what Chuck Grassley thinks of you. So if you're not a multimillionaire, he thinks, yeah, you're a schmuck. You're a bum. You spent all your money on booze. That's why you didn't get rich.
So shame on you, Tiny Tim.
I know. Shame on you, Tiny Tim. And I tell you what, I've got a finger to lift on to Orrin Hatch. I got a finger to lift.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can, he's talking about helping themselves. You got to hand it to Orrin Hatch. He helps himself.
He does help himself.
In fact, all the Republicans are good at helping themselves, so whatever's out there. In A Christmas Carol, Dickens portrays the mean, miserable Scrooge who experiences a conversion of heart through dreams of ghosts that include his former business partner Marley and spirits that lead him to see where his life is headed.
Now, for some reason, our clip of Orrin Hatch did not show up. And we have a clip of Orrin Hatch. And you just have to bear with me while I take a look and see if we can locate it real quick. But in essence, Orrin Hatch said that he's tired of government funds, billions, millions of dollars of government funds, trillions of dollars going to people that don't lift a finger. And that's where I said, I got a finger for Orrin Hatch. So there. Now we're caught up. Okay, here we go.
It would seem that not even a visit from Marley's ghost would budge Messrs. Grassley or Hatch and how many other Republicans.
And Harvey, I've got a clip. I've got a clip from The Christmas Carol starring George C. Scott. Now, here, Scrooge has just entered the exchange where people are buying and selling goods. And here he is, the essence of business. And then he gets confronted by two men trying to help the poor. Do you want to hear this clip?
Why not?
24 January, the open market. Any open market?
I'm here, buying.
Hi, Ebenezer. We were afraid you weren't coming.
It's almost closing, sir.
Well, I'm here, aren't I?
I said you'd be here. Didn't I say Ebenezer Scrooge would be here? I knew you'd change your mind.
Right, I have changed my mind.
Oh, good, then you'll take our bid.
The price has gone up.
Gone up? But that's not possible.
You want my corn, gentlemen. You must meet my quota. Plus 5% for the delay.
That's outrageous, Scrooge. You'll be left with a warehouse stuffed with corn.
Well, that's my affair, isn't it?
But if we pay your price, our bread will be dearer. The poor will suffer.
Buy the corn someplace else. Good day, sir.
Scrooge, a moment. We'll take your corn at the price you quoted yesterday.
Too late. If you wait until tomorrow, it'll cost you another 5%.
Damn it, Scrooge, it's not fair.
No, but it's business. I'll give you a moment to make up your minds. Very good, gentlemen. Now, make sure that a draft for the entire amount of this transaction is deposited with my clerk. I don't ship until I have the cash in hand.
Okay.
Mr. Scrooge, I presume.
Indeed you do, sir.
You don't know us.
Nor do I wish to. My name is Poole, and this is Mr. Hackett.
Excellent. Now, if you'll allow me to pass.
Let me explain something. At this festive season of the year, it seems desirable that those of us with means should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this time.
Provision? Are you seeking money from any?
Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons.
The workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are. I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill, the poorhouses, still in full vigor?
All very busy, sir.
I was afraid from what you said that something had stopped them in full force.
A few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and food and warmth.
Oh, what can we put you down for, sir?
Nothing. You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. My taxes help to support the public institutions which I have mentioned, and they cost enough. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, perhaps they had better do so and decrease the surplus population.
Surely you don't mean that, sir.
With all my heart. Now, if you will go about your business, gentlemen, and allow me to go about mine.
Harvey, did you notice the idle people? I could just see him saying, I wish they would just lift a finger.
Uh-huh.
So that he would feel better about giving them some money. All right, now, as you know, and the story says, Scrooge is confronted by three ghosts. Now, in this particular version, the George C. Scott version, the second ghost lectures Scrooge as they look in on the meager Christmas being enjoyed by the Bob Cratchit family as they eat their dinner. Would this compare to Grassley's booze, women, and movies? Well, maybe not the movies, but he had his wife there.
Yeah, and that's women, right?
And that's women, and maybe they were sipping some cider. So do you want to listen to what the Ghost of Christmas Present says?
A Merry Christmas.
Okay.
And God bless us, everyone.
Spirit, will he live?
I see a vacant place at this table. I see a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, say he would be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my species will find him here. But if he is to die, then let him die and decrease the surplus population.
You use my own words against me.
So perhaps in the future you will hold your tongue until you have discovered what the surplus population is and where it is. It may well be that in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child.
Will you show me this? What has it to do with me?
Are they not of the human race? Look here! Beneath my robe! Look upon these!
What are they?
They are your children! They are the children of all who walk the earth unseen. Their names are ignorance and want. Beware of them. For upon their brow is written the word doom.
They spell the downfall of you and all who deny their existence.
Have I no refuge, no resource?
Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons?
Cover them. They do not wish to see them.
I've ordered as much. They are hidden. But they live. Oh, they live.
Well, I certainly hope that Senator Hatch hasn't watched that lately. He might have his sleep disturbed, but I doubt it.
I doubt it.
Well, similarly, you know, Charles Dickens could describe 19th century capitalist London as a tale of two cities. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Sadly, this could also describe present-day Nashville. And in fact, the NOAA task force has described Nashville as a tale of two cities.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the war on Christmas, let's get back to that. I mean, to understand what war on Christmas would mean, first we needed to consider what Christmas is supposed to be about, especially for all those devout and noisy evangelical Christians who helped elect Donald Trump president.
Exactly.
Since these people are so fond of quoting the Bible to justify everything from discrimination against gays to guns in churches, let's see what this Bible tells us about the meaning of Christmas. By that, we're talking about the celebration of the incarnation of the divine in the person of Jesus. The Gospel of Luke describes the young virgin, and that's translated different ways, Mary, as the angel Gabriel appears to her and announces that she's been chosen to bear a child that will deliver her people. She submits despite her bewilderment, and before long her betrothed, Joseph, notes she is with child and is scandalized, but he relents after being assured in a dream. This actual account was used by one of the arch-Christian Roy Moore's supporters.
What?
To defend Sheriff Moore's attraction to teenage girls at the Gunnersville Mall.
Could you say that again? I mean, let's go over this. You just described the scene that we've heard in all of our Christian churches for years and years and years, which is a very holy and devout set of circumstances leading up to the birth of Jesus. And now you're saying that some of the evangelicals, the arch-Christians, and I don't get it, who were Roy Moore supporters, were using that to defend his attraction to teenage girls at the local mall. And so he was just like Joseph and his attraction to Mary. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Mary, according to most scholars, they think was about 14. So that's right at the same age as that girl that he got in the car. I won't get into the gory details of what he did, but it was just like Joseph. Joseph liked him young, I guess.
Oh my God.
Too, huh?
Yeah. Well, continue. I'm sorry.
And that's biblical, right?
Yeah.
And then Luke continues with Mary's song to her cousin Elizabeth during what they call the visitation, when she is with child and visits her cousin who is carrying John the Baptist, but in which she thanks and praises God for the child in her womb, Mary. And to her, what does that mean? It means that the Lord, who has looked upon his handmaid in her lowliness, has scattered the proud, has brought down the mighty from their thrones, and has raised up the lowly, and has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty.
The rich he has sent away empty.
Well, I really doubt that this message about the hungry and the rich is quite what Trump had in mind when he was talking about Christmas being back bigger and better than ever. But Luke continues, describing when Mary and Joseph are turned away Mary, who is close to being delivering the baby, are turned away by the innkeeper in Bethlehem, and she must give birth in a stall for the animals. But, you know, how many of the 13 million additional uninsured will be turned away from hospitals or elsewhere, or will be made homeless and be turned away in their hour of need? Come on, Christians, your silence is deafening.
What was that? Come on, Christians, your silence is deafening.
Yeah.
What part of the Bible are you missing? Okay.
So, anyway, there were no Twitter accounts in the first century, but information, as always, was power and was hoarded and manipulated by the powerful. So, what does Luke tell us about who were the first to hear about the birth of a Savior? A bunch of filthy shepherds.
Yep.
About as low on the social ladder as you can get. The message they received? Do not be afraid. Peace is possible for all people of goodwill.
All people of goodwill.
Yeah.
All right.
So that must have something to do with what Christmas is about, huh?
I think.
And what this child means.
And
what about the wall we have to build?
I know. Well, we got to keep some of these shepherds in their place.
If we weren't afraid, would we need to build a wall?
No.
And, you know, don't even get us started about Trump administration and even the Obama administration's previous treatment of immigrants and refugees. You know, when ICE agents stopped an ambulance taking a 10-year-old Mexican girl with cerebral palsy, who was taking her to the hospital for surgery, and began deportation proceedings on her parents while waiting to deport the girl after her surgery. Is that not war on Christmas?
That is a war on Christmas.
That's a war on everything that Christmas would stand for.
Yeah, everything related to the message of Jesus Christ.
Well, I would say, you know, it's a war on basic decency that certainly every religion insists upon.
Compassion.
Kindness. But what about all those guns we have to have carry around everywhere to protect our families and ourselves from bad hombres?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about the...
We are the most well-armed country in the whole world.
Yeah. And we have more deaths from guns than any other country.
But the angel says, do not be afraid. Peace is possible.
What about the $700 billion we have to spend next year for weapons and war making?
Mm-hmm.
What is that about peace?
About fear?
Is that peace? Is that fear? Well, then there's the flight into Egypt, where the Holy Family, Joseph, Mary, and Jesus, are refugees fleeing Bethlehem, fleeing from King Herod's wrath as he orders the slaughter of all the male infants to ensure this newborn king will not threaten his power. In a similar vein, President Trump has given free rein to military commanders to not fret about civilian deaths in their relentless airstrikes and drone attacks on suspected enemy combatants in that same part of the world.
And while we participate and generate the carnage in that land, in the land where Jesus was born, and on a people much like Jesus, sorry, you know, listen up, guys, much like Jesus, meaning hardworking family who had to live under the brutality of an occupier. And we refuse to give aid to tens of thousands of those people we have displaced. Now, Harvey, I just want to mention one thing. You know what? That baby grew up, and of course, oh my goodness, that baby grew up. And he had the temerity to say, blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are the hunger, are those who are hungry and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That comes right out of Matthew 5, 3 through 10. And you know,
Beatitudes.
Yeah, the Beatitudes. You know, and based on those eight statements, not one of Trump's administration, nor Trump, nor Orrin Hatch, or Chuck Grassley, or anyone who else has voted for this tax bill is blessed. Not one. So, Harvey, you know that it drives these alt-right people crazy when you point out that Jesus was at least a liberal and a, by all rights, progressive. You know, Harvey, I've got confirmation that Jesus was a progressive. And this comes from Jackson Brown. And the song is called The Rebel Jesus. Now, by rebel, I don't want anybody to confuse it with Confederate. So here's Jackson Brown and The Rebel Jesus. So, Harvey, we are in the holiday season. Of course, it can be a joyful time of year. But for some, it only aggravates...
You mean the Christmas season.
The Christmas season.
I'm talking about holiday season.
That's right. But, you know, this Christmas season aggravates the loneliness, the hunger, and the despair of so many. And with this tax bill being passed, it's just going to aggravate that even more as people begin to worry what the effects are going to be. But I've always wondered about being a little child who is watching TV and you see Santa coming to deliver presents for all the good little boys and girls. And you wake up on Christmas to get little or nothing. Oh, by the time you're 10 years old or so, you figured it out. But what about if you're 5 or 6 or 7 year old who waits anxiously and swears he or she hears those hoofs on the roof on Christmas Eve and gets so excited? Do we ever consider that that little boy or girl must wonder what they did wrong? How were they bad? Why does the little white kid in the other neighborhood get the presents and he or she didn't? How does the little doll that the poor little girl, the girl in poverty, got, how does that compare with the bike or the video game that other kids got? Oh, she will love that little doll, Harvey, but also wonder, why didn't she get the big present like the other kids? I've always just thought that those commercials and shows which talk about Santa visiting the good little boys and girls was so insensitive. And of course, I was a middle school teacher, and I saw the spectrum of the well-to-do to the poor and the stiff upper lip that some of my kids in poverty would come back to school and have to listen to the wealthier kids about what they got and what they did, and know that things were just not possible for their family, and it was just heartbreaking. So let me ask you, if you are as disgusted by the ever-present commercial for luxury cars, this always also drives me crazy, in the driveway, the undue opulence, self-indulgence, and inconsideration is striking.
Yeah.
At least to me.
Well, my advantage is I don't watch enough TV to see the ads.
I know.
Hopefully the kids are protected from a lot of that.
Hopefully. Well, you know, these ads just are run rampant during football games,
yeah,
which are everywhere this time of year.
Yeah, that's, you know, the kids ought to be able to just have the kid shows, which are also full of ads.
Yeah.
For, you know, sugar cereals and
things like that.
Crap, but it's based on movies and stuff.
It seems like while we throw out the facade of a Christmas season built on the birth of the baby we described above, it still comes down to the haves and the have-nots. And the oligarchs, the rich, the powerful, the greedy, are winning in today's commercials. They're winning in all the commercials. All our movies, all our magazines, all our wishes, and all our satisfaction.
Well, at least they can, the kids who are the have-nots can identify with that baby in the manger.
Yes.
Right?
That may not help.
Not getting a video game.
It may not help. May not help. All right, so we talked about A Christmas Carol and the message, and there are other message movies. And there are other message movies. And one of my favorite is A Wonderful Life. And if you are not familiar with the story, or even if you are, it is clear that this story is about the goodness of some people versus the greed and corporate corruption of others. Jimmy Stewart plays George Bailey. He's a good man who reluctantly takes on responsibility for a floundering but compassionate building and loan, which helps middle class and poor people buy their own homes. Lionel Barrymore plays the greedy banker, Mr. Potter. So I want you to play a clip and listen to his disdain for the people who work. When I play this clip, now the movie was produced and directed by Frank Capra,
right.
And so in the clip I'm going to play, Remember? It was 1945 or 46.
So it's post-war, huh?
It was post-war.
Yeah, because yeah. Harry, the brother, was
he comes
a
back.
War hero.
Yeah. So it must have been 46 or 47.
Yeah.
In this clip, George Bailey, being played by Jimmy Stewart, has just finished a time at his deceased father's building and loan, kind of cleaning things up because his dad has just died unexpectedly due to a stroke. And he's meeting with the board of directors to determine the future of the building and loan. He faces Mr. Potter, who owns the bank, not the building and loan. He owns the bank and most of Bedford Falls, the little town in upstate New York where the movie takes place.
Pennsylvania.
Is it Pennsylvania?
I don't know why I've always thought that. Maybe not.
What? Okay. Well, we can look that up. But either it's in the Northeast. It's snowy. But you know, he's never
been Rust Belt now.
Yeah, he'd never been able to get his. You know, the problem is Potter has always wanted to get his hands in the building loan because it's a competitor, and he's never been able to. So the clip starts off with Potter wanting to close down the building and loan, and moves on to him describing with Grassley or Hatch-like disdain. And we heard Grassley before and Hatch-like. So he really embodies Grassley and Hatch.
And vice versa,
with his disdain for the people who work and live and die in Bedford Falls. So here's the clip.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to my real purpose.
Wait just a minute now.
Wait for what? I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dissolve this institution and turn its assets and liabilities over to the receiver.
It's too soon after Peter Bailey's death to talk about chloroforming the building and loan.
Peter Bailey died 3 months ago. I second Mr. Potter's motion.
Very well. In that case, I'll ask the two executive officers to withdraw. But before you go, I'm sure the whole board wishes to express its deep sorrow at the passing of Peter Bailey.
Thank you.
It was his faith and devotion that are responsible for this organization.
I'll go further than that. I'll say that to the public, Peter Bailey was the building and loan.
Oh, that's fine, Potter, coming from you, considering that you probably drove him to his grave.
Peter Bailey was not a businessman. That's what killed him. Oh, I don't mean any disrespect to him, God rest his soul. He was a man of high ideals, so-called. But ideals without common sense can ruin this town. Now, you take this loan here, the Ernie Bishop. You know, that fellow that sits around all day on his brains in a taxi, you know. I happen to know the bank turned down this loan. But he comes here, and we're building him a house worth $5,000. Why?
Well, I handled that, Mr. Potter. You have all the papers there, his salary, insurance. I can personally vouch for his character.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You see, if you shoot pool with some employee here, you can come and borrow money. What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class. And all because a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey stir them up and fill their heads with a lot of impossible ideas. Now, I say...
Just a minute now. Hold on, Mr. Potter. Just a minute. Now, you're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny-ante building alone, I'll never know. But neither you nor anybody else can say anything against his character because his whole life... Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. Isn't that right, Uncle Billy? He didn't save enough money to send Harry to school, let alone me. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Well, here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You said that what'd you say just a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait for what? Until their children grow up and leave them, until they're so old and broken down that you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. That's what you're talking about. I know. Well, I've said too much. You're the board here. You do what you want with this thing. There's just one thing more, though. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter.
So, Harvey, we've just listened to a couple of clips from two famous and revered stories, movies, that I don't know about you, but my family watches every year. Mm-hmm. Every year. I know a lot of families watch mm-hmm. these two stories yeah. and others every Christmas time. Mm-hmm. It's tradition.
Yeah.
But what drives me crazy is that the message seems to get lost along the way. Here we have Scrooge, a rehabilitated capitalist who now becomes the provider and the person who saves Tiny Tim's life after being visited by ghosts who say, this is the wrong way to live your life.
Here's where it's headed.
Here's where it's headed. And so he rehabilitates. Then you have George Bailey, who has taken care of a community. And when he finds himself in trouble, the community doesn't abandon him. They rally around him and they get him out of the trouble that Potter has put him in. And if you know the story, you know that Potter sneaks a $10,000 deposit yeah. that is misplaced
yeah.
and puts George into a bind. So
Potter does not become, he goes through no conversion.
He goes through no conversion.
So the difference I would say between the two, and the reason I like the Dickens better, is because Scrooge, as hateful as he is, the ghost of Christmas Past helps us understand the roots mm-hmm. of how he is, what he has become.
What he's become.
The pain of his own childhood.
Yeah.
Rejection. That he experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So he becomes a more complex character.
Right.
Than just the embodiment of evil.
Which is Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know where Potter has come from.
And for people to change, maybe even Grassley, if we knew his past, we would understand it
change.
Better. Who knows? But I think, the message I get through the Christmas Carol is that. If you don't understand, or you repress, the painful things in your life, and you spend the rest of your life, walled in, you aren't free to change. And it's when this spirit, or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
Literally took him by the hand and helped him.
Showed him the abyss.
Yeah, revisit.
Mm-hmm. Showed him his
where
past.
Where it all came from.
Yeah.
That he was able to have compassion for himself. And then he was able to have compassion for others.
Now, on the flip side, see, on A Wonderful Life, we see the incorrigible, the unrepentant,
yeah.
the impossibility of the Potter character to be rehabilitated. That's where I see Grassley and Hatch. That's where I see the people who voted for this tax bill. That's where I see the Trump administration. These people, these corporatists, are incapable of being rehabilitated. But what happened? The community rallied around George.
Yes.
Got him out of trouble. We need a community that can rally around yeah. and overwhelm the capitalists, the corporatists, the bankers. And so while I really agree with the concept of Scrooge and the ability to be rehabilitated if you're visited by spirits, or let's say even
redemption.
By conscience.
Conscience, yeah.
Yeah. I see a very positive there. I don't see that happening with many of our capitalists. And this is where The Wonderful Life shows that if people can rally, if people can stand together, we got a chance. But even with George, he had an angel. who made it all happen.
Yeah.
So we need some sort of divine intervention to base this down.
Yeah, and I agree that, you know, trying to change Grassley or Paul Ryan or these other people, you know, you only have so much energy.
Mm-hmm. and there's too many of them.
You have to understand, you know, who needs to be protected. And they may need to be protected from themselves, but that, I'm sorry, that's their job.
But pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Come on, man.
But on the other hand, I can't say that they're hopeless cases because I don't know. But all I know is their actions and what effects those actions have.
Yep.
And our obligation is to try to stop that, you know, harmful things that are being done.
So there's a little bit of our discussion about the war on Christmas and whether it's definitely not the war that Fox would portray. I think it's the capitalist corporatist war on the message of Jesus. What do you think, Harvey?
Well,
and we got a minute.
We do? Uh-oh.
Just 1 minute.
I think that the war on Christmas is as Fox sees it, all about the surface, you know, superficial side. But, you know, what you say to someone, if you have no respect for their own, what's important to them,
mm-hmm.
That goes beyond whether you're saying Merry Christmas or anything else. If you're making lots of assumptions about people, and you probably do that in all areas of your life, not just whether you say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. So
what I'm going to say is Merry Christmas, Harvey, and keep your spirits up and your head down, and we're going to finish it up with a traditional Christmas carol with just a little bit of a bite to it.
Okay, well, I'm going to say Happy Holidays, so there.
Merry Christmas. Have a good one, and everybody, whatever,
and everyone listening,
whatever you
happy holidays and whatever
whatever you celebrate, go for it.
Yeah, and don't worry about what's under the tree.
There you go.
Subcommittee of the House Committee on Un-American Activities continued its probe into anti-Vietnam War protests. Demonstrators were forcibly evicted from the hearings when they began chanting anti-war slogans. Former Vice President Richard Nixon says that unless there is a substantial increase in the present war effort in Vietnam, the U.S. should look forward to 5 more years of war. In a speech before the Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in New York, Nixon also said opposition to the war in this country is the greatest single weapon working against the U.S. That's the 7 o'clock edition of the news. Good night.
Hi, I'm Eileen with the Oregon Cultural Trust. Community radio means access to music, news, and programming for everyone. That's why I support KABU with my contribution every year. It's also why I match that gift to the Oregon Cultural Trust. When you